a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant at the G, Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Hello, I'm George here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5, broadcasting live from East River 9. Thank you to Sean Mapes. Long day today. Starting at 7 a.m., leaving at 2 o'clock. Hard worker right there, that Sean Mapes. A beautiful day to play some golf. We're out here celebrating Paul's birthday. That's why we're out at East River 9, just so we can be outside on a beautiful day and not be inside while we watch the Astros get shellacked.
Listen, this is an awesome place. You can pretend that the Astros game isn't on here in the River House, East River 9, because there's other televisions on. It does look like ESPN2 is perhaps showing the O.J. Simpson Made in America documentary.
Oh, they are.
Sean made a joke during the commercial break that the NFL Network was going to be paying tribute to O.J. Simpson's NFL career all day, and I believed him for a second. But you can also watch the Masters, and it really is a beautiful day. There's a huge patio outside with a big TV that the Masters are on right now.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch the Masters.
What a great combination. You could watch the Masters, go to the driving range, go back and watch the Masters a little bit more. This is the best place to watch, I think, golf.
Absolutely. Because you can play, whatever you want to do.
Because I imagine most people who golf, when you watch, you also want to get the juice a little bit. Yeah, you want to put a couple of swings in there.
So what are the toughest decisions facing the Rockets, Texans, and Astros? We went through the Jalen Green one earlier. It is very complicated. So I'm gonna nuke our first segment and just say that everything's bad. And the toughest decision the Astros might have to face this year is who they're trading at the deadline. It's not going to be this bad.
That brings it back to what we were discussing a little bit earlier. Maybe not whether or not Alex Bregman cares or if he's making business decisions. But at the trade deadline, that is an interesting piece, especially if the Astros think to themselves, well, there's not anything that we can really come to an agreement with him on.
I mean, Paul, I think it goes past that. If you are, you're going to be, eight games below 500 after today, unless a miracle happens. You are chasing a deficit in your win-loss record already. That's quite sizable. So there's a reality in which, you get closer to the deadline and you are a, 500 team. And if there was ever going to be a moment to change what you've done as a franchise, because you're not sure you're going to make the playoffs this year, and say we have the worst farm system in baseball, or one of the worst farm systems in baseball, we are really feeling now like this is what you're seeing with the Astros. This is the real punishment from the cheating scandal. Like, this is years of not having first-round picks. Like, this is like really where, like, because in theory, you have a hitter or a pitcher that is deep into their development, and they're ready to come up at this point instead of Spencer Arrighetti, who's not really a great prospect.
But eventually that was going to run dry, too. I'm not sure that we can make a strong argument that the farm system would definitively be better. It would have a better chance of being better,
sure,
of course, if you find those players. But the reality is that due to injuries, the Astros are in this situation. And maybe this is something that they're going to have to look at in the mirror going forward when it comes to starting pitching and signing starting pitching to long-term deals. This is really maybe a wake-up call for all of baseball, with everyone throwing with the spin rate and velocity that they are reaching these days compared to recent years. You got to think long and hard about long-term contracts for any pitcher, no matter how talented. Because there's a good chance he'll be missing for a year and a half, having to get Tommy John surgery, and then after that, it's a ticking time bomb for that next Tommy John surgery. So I think the Astros are in this spot, Joe, because they have put so much money into the pitchers that they already have, that they have developed, and it limits their ability to go after players elsewhere. They have the third highest payroll in baseball. I can't get mad at them for a lack of trying this offseason. They have tried. They've made the wrong decisions, and that is certainly something that you can point at Jeff Bagwell specifically for, Jim Crane specifically for, during the time where they didn't have a general manager. And if you want, I guess you can point at Dana Brown as well. But I don't really know how much is Dana Brown's fault at this moment in time as much as he's just saying things that annoy me.
Sure.
They're in a spot where the reinforcements that they should have should be here, and they're injured.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I'm not getting so mad about where we're at right now, as opposed to the words to describe these struggles by Dana Brown and Joe Espada. The horses are here. It's just right now we have to wait to see all of them, and they're in a no-win situation. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think it'll be a tough decision if things go the way they are. From the 409, how has the punishment by MLB for the cheating scandal affected our farm? Because they took your draft picks.
It's two players.
You're right.
And let's be honest, we forget about Mark Appel and Brady Aiken all the time.
You're right.
These are guys that they got early.
But you have to hit on those players, right?
Exactly. So let's say for the sake of argument, one of these guys is here. Is that one guy, much like Yandy is in the playoffs, is that one guy going to be the difference?
No,
probably
he's not. No, because it's maybe your rotation is one less expensive guy, and he's pitching for you right now and knocking up 9 runs instead of Jose Urquidy being on the injured list. It is not a end all be all. But where the tough decision can come into play is really of if they're not. If they don't do these things that are frustrating you and I, what Dana Brown is saying, 8-10 games in a row at some point, and they're a handful of games below 500 at the deadline, they're going to have some tough decisions to make. They're going to have to look in the mirror and say, okay, is this the time where we're not bringing back Alex Bregman? So we should trade him, because the answer is yes. And I would go farther and say the tougher question, because I think Bregman's an easy yes. The real question would be Kyle Tucker. Is if you don't think you're going to re-sign Kyle Tucker and you're not in position to make the playoffs this year because this season struggles continue, which I don't think they will you make that move if you're Dana Brown? That's a real tough decision.
100%. We don't know the answer to it now. I'm sure we're going to have this conversation a lot the rest of the year, especially if the Astros continue to play like this, because that's the only reason it's a remote possibility. As far as Bregman, I do wonder what Bregman would actually get you in return in a trade, just given you're trading for a rental. You might be able to get something, no doubt about it, but Bregman also, I think, has to be playing at a higher level than he's playing at right now.
Oh, yeah.
To get that kind of a haul. With Tucker, yeah, Tucker would get you a huge haul, and that would, if you combine the two of them, your hope is, okay, you can potentially restock the farm system and get some guys eventually, but... Yeah, there's going to come a moment where they're going to look at the payroll and they're going to be like, yep, this is not going where we want it to. That's where the Mets found themselves in the middle of last year.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mets still have, if not the highest, the second highest payroll in baseball right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they just keep spending money. Like the Mets, I give them credit. They're going to be in on Juan Soto next year. And that's the other thing about the Astros, too, where I know things, even if they did get to this point, let's hypothetically at the deadline where they had to make some really challenging, tough decisions. The core is still there, right? So, you're probably taking a small step back to hopefully make a bunch step forward, because you would still have Yainer Diaz, Jeremy Pena, Yordan Alvarez as your young core group of players with the veteran in there and Jose Altuve. So, not all things are bad. And No, they're not the A's. You still have, you're very much in a position where the Mets are a good example. The Mets haven't actually accomplished anything, whereas the Astros have.
We're so used to them being awesome that this is annoying to the point of us getting angry and yelling about it. And there's still a lot of season left for them to figure out a lot of these things. But it is hard to look at that scoreboard right now, or the scoreboard last night. 11-2, 9-0, back-to-back games against a Kansas City team that, okay, maybe is the best team in the American League Central, best-case scenario. It's just a lot to stomach, and it makes you have these uncomfortable thoughts because it's a marathon, not a sprint. I'm sure a lot of people on marathons, mile two, are like, this sucks.
Would you ever do it?
A marathon?
Yeah.
No.
Half?
No.
Not even a half?
No.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Not even a half. A half is still 13 miles. F that.
Yeah.
I could maybe do a 5K, and then I wouldn't even want to do it. I hate running long distance.
I hate running?
Yeah. I like sprinting. I don't like long distance running.
Yeah, I don't do the treadmill. Like, if it's a workout day, like a cardio day,
I do the elliptical.
I like the
and
elliptical.
Even that, I don't like it. But, hey, at least I get to watch something on my phone now that we're in 2024.
Yeah.
I can watch a Netflix show.
I would rather, walk at a fast pace on a treadmill with a steep incline.
Supposedly, that's just as good.
Yeah, I don't want to run on a treadmill.
My knees are terrible.
Same.
That's what happens at age 35, Joe.
Yeah, that's when they really start breaking down.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, not 32. So
I just got a car back at Love Street, baby, at East River 9. You hear that crack on the microphone?
It did sound nice.
It's crisp.
All right, what about the Houston Texans? What's the toughest decision the Texans have to face? We haven't really hit on them yet, but plus we mentioned this briefly earlier. There is some weird stuff going on with the Houston Astros off the field. That has nothing to do with anything of Hunter Brown. We're talking about
incredible
Twitter and television, plus the Houston Texans next year on Gallant & George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Blue and Red Rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Back to Gallant & George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9.
Couple texts here, Paul. 832, no one is talking about the pitching coaches since Brent Strom left. The pitching hasn't been the same.
We used to talk about the pitching coaches all the time. Wasn't that like a daily conversation? How good is Brent Strom? Nobody's talking about what he's doing for this Astros pitching staff. And
Miller,
then the guy's gone long enough. Yeah, you do forget about him.
Miller and Murphy will get fired at the end of the season if things continue this way. Plus more, I would imagine. At some point, the blame game has to start to get played somewhere.
I'm surprised they haven't announced the mass firings of the training staff, the medical staff. Because the injuries that have been happening over the last couple of years, plus the confusion with which either Dusty Baker or Dana Brown or Jeff Bagwell or Joe Spada or Jim Crane, the way that everybody's talked about him, you would think by this point the communication would lend some to believe that they're not doing a good job, seeing as there are so many guys that are injured and haven't played for this team in a really long time.
Yeah, so I'm not surprised if we see a lot of changes. Even if things turn around, it's just at some point, I thought there would be new voices in the room. And this is probably a signal at some point there will be. To your point, they could have fired, like, all the training staff, and we just don't know it, I guess, in
that's
theory.
That's true. But like, I think you would announce that.
Yeah, I feel like
unless
that would...
you feel like it's not going to get better with the new training staff.
Yeah. So what's weirder, this TV thing with Space City Home Network where they just keep going to commercial? And
that, I think, is a glitch. I think the other thing you're about to throw is much, much funnier.
Yeah, so I don't know if this statistic is true. I got to see if I can find it in our group chat. But apparently, the Astros Twitter account has blocked 4,769 fans yesterday. Now, this comes after some scumbag doxed the Astros new Twitter person.
And
they
found
out that she's a Dodgers fan.
I mean,
and she said on her LinkedIn she's going to be rooting for the Dodgers when they play the Astros. Now look, that is a tough thing. I would think as an organization, the Astros fundamentally made a mistake here. You should hire someone that roots for your team because you want them to be a fan. Like even I think I could do a great job at that. I would not hire myself to run a team social media account for the Astros. Because, like, there are certain things I'm going to miss historically, contextually. It's that, like, I'm going to get picked apart on Twitter, right? And I think doxing this person, I do think that sucks. But I also don't think people should be surprised. If this was Yankees Twitter, like, if the Yankees Twitter account was going at the Astros religiously, and Astros fans would dox that person, and most of Astros Twitter, the Looney Tune part of it that we all know exists, would celebrate this. It's like, this isn't uncommon. This is the same thing that happened to Leah Van when she got here.
Correct.
Yes, she had some tweets about the Rangers. I don't know why anyone's surprised by this.
But she is a Rangers fan.
There is a portion of Astros Twitter that is really brutal. And honestly, it is a small portion.
It's every fan base.
Yeah.
Not to single out them, but we are seeing this on a more regular basis. I'm not endorsing it. I'm not damning it. It just is what it is in every single city.
But to block your own fans, even though that stuff happens.
I think it's really funny.
It is funny, but at the same time,
it's sensitive and thin-skinned.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that they would even go down that path because it's hard to even tell why some of these people got blocked.
The only people that I have blocked on my Twitter are as a joke. Joel Osteen.
Okay.
Phil Simms.
Okay.
And Chris Broussard.
Okay.
And I just think it's funny to say, like, these are the three people I've blocked.
I only have one person blocked.
You only have one?
Yeah. Yeah, this scumbag who was coming at me, my buddy Adam Sager, used to work for Salisbury Show and worked here at Gal for a while on that show when they were on TV, like two years ago at this point, I guess it was.
Okay.
Like he went into a coma from COVID, and he was in a coma for like 4 or 5 months.
Jeez.
And I tweeted out the GoFundMe, and there's this like total scumbag just wouldn't stop tweeting about me about the if he got the vaccine or not.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, all right, dude, I'm done. It's like, it's literally the only person I've ever blocked.
One of my friends, Maggie McKeithen, who I've talked about before, who passed away fairly recently.
Yeah.
I have one person who has still tweeted asking,
what really happened there?
And then asking the same thing about Fred Fowler. For the last couple of weeks.
Seen that.
I do not give these people the satisfaction of a block, though.
No. Yeah, it was just the one person. I was like, I don't blame you. With this guy.
That person.
Yeah, I don't know. The Astros, the vibes are low with the team, not with the Twitter, not with
they're
the
not
Twitter
just
admin.
Low. Joe, they're bad.
Yeah.
And people are going to look for others to get mad at. They're looking for a dog to kick. And the Astros Twitter account is that person right now. But look, the Astros Twitter account has kind of sucked.
I mean, that I'm not going to deny. It was really fun before.
That's the only reason that this has come up is that the new person running it, bless her heart, is tweeting things like, it's giving main character energy. And
yeah, that was a miss.
And you're going from before saying tens of runs in front of tens of fans, which I'm sure baseball didn't like, and I'm sure the Astros didn't really like. But that's what you want. You want the hometown broadcast team to not necessarily be professional. You want them to be homers, and for the Twitter account, you're going to want the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you want some ball busting of other teams, and you don't want it to sound like a TikToker who's 20 years old, who's, you know, doing all the most basic things possible.
Yeah, it's just it's avoidable, and all of it was. It's just bizarre the way that things have been going down on social media regarding the Astros, from the on the field to the off the field. It's been like relentless.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
As the Astros would say. Big decisions the Texans are facing going forward. Nico Collins is one. I thought it was interesting what you said earlier, just like the kind of like it's like the decision themselves if they're for real. Like who are you as a franchise? Like, are you the team that you portrayed last year?
Yeah.
Or are you someone else? I thought that was interesting because that's not the answer I was expecting.
Well, yeah, because they have some tough future questions that they got to answer. But you also got to wonder, I mean, are they going to be able to do what they did last year again?
Mm.
It's a tougher schedule. They're going up against some really good quarterbacks. And, okay, you have on your roster all sorts of talent on the offensive end, but is the defensive end going to be able to carry its weight? I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know if they will either. Specifically because we still see these just major weaknesses on their defense within the secondary at corner and safety, and then they're just missing a big dude in the middle of the defensive line.
Or in the middle of the offensive line maybe too. But again,
yeah,
it's...
Kenny Green might be a good answer for this.
They're such a trendy pick right now, and history has told me that while there are some teams that win the offseason and end up winning a Super Bowl, like say what the Broncos did, adding all that they did to their defense after the year remaining through for all those touchdowns. And on paper, you're like, oh, my God, I mean, they're probably going to go all the way back. The Patriots are the only team that they have to get past back in those days of the AFC. But for the most part, the teams that win this time of year are not the ones that are holding up the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year.
No. I mean, look at the Chiefs. What have they done in recent offseason history?
They've lost Tyreek Hill, which made a lot of us wonder whether or not the Chiefs would be good. They've won two Super Bowls since losing Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, like they
back
make,
to back.
They make moves like sign Justin Reed.
Yeah.
Draft Trent McDuffie. Draft, you know, Rashee Rice, who's facing now 8 counts.
Yeah, Rashee Rice, very good. Yeah, we'll see if he plays this season.
Yeah, he's facing a lot of counts at this point.
I will say, like, honesty might help him here.
Yeah.
He has been rather honest since, obviously, making a very dumb decision to walk away from the scene of an accident.
He has been very, it's my car, I was driving it, I snuck out the passenger side to try to make it seem like I wasn't driving it. They clearly, it's one of those where, that felt like his lawyer had a reality check of, hey, dude, you're not OJ. You're not getting away with this one. So just be honest and tell the truth as much as humanly possible.
Tell the truth.
Kenyon Green, that's got to be a massive decision.
I feel like we already know the answer to that question, though. I think.
But they're sticking with it? Or
no, I just don't think it's going to work. I think it's been too bad of a first 2 years. He might be able to be a depth interior piece on the offensive line for the remainder of his contract at a reasonable rate to a degree. But, I mean, it's a first-round pick. Right now, you're not picking up his option. And
yeah.
I would be surprised if he is a regular contributor for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I still feel like in the second round, I wouldn't be shocked if – and we are going to be doing a draft show that night. Our draft show this year is going to be on Friday.
Hell yeah.
Obviously, because the Texans don't have any first-round picks on Thursday. So we will air the NFL draft in its entirety in the first round.
Let's go.
Thanks to ESPN on Thursday. That coverage will start right after the Killer Bees. And then right now, I believe it's going to be Paul, myself, Dell. I think Brian and Sean are going to be there as well. Location TBD.
Cool.
But we will be doing a draft show that Friday night from 6 to 9. It wouldn't shock me if the Texans took a left guard at 42.
Everything's on the table.
We're done with Kenyon Green.
When you draft there, everything's on the table. I know that some people are going to look at a list and say, hey, I want a player at X, Y, Z, and totally fair. But at that point, don't be surprised by anything that happens. Mm. Your draft board gets to a point where you are probably going to be missing a lot of people that you were hoping would be there at that spot, especially since there's so many people who believe that from essentially, what, picks number, I don't know, let's say 15 to 50.
Oh,
there's a lot of talent in the same range. That's what I've seen, at least.
The gap is not that wide once you get out of, like, those elite first-round picks to what's going to be available through, like, most of the second round.
Correct.
So that's why they're in a good position. The draft's going to be really interesting this year for the Houston Texans, just which direction they want to go, because they really have so many options and can just go best available if they want, but not they don't they just don't have it's weird. I can't believe we're like the idea of this segment when we first kind of started going through it, and I was like, do you know how different this would be any other year the last like 3 years? All the tough decisions we'd be talking about are with the Texans. Mm-hmm. None of it, and really now it's all the Astros and the Rockets.
Yep, pretty much.
The Texans have very little tough questions to answer besides just like looking in the mirror and are we going to be good?
Is Houston a football town?
Yes. It always has been and always will be a football town.
I don't agree with that. I think Houston's a bandwagon town. I think Houston likes whatever team's good. I think a lot of people that are my age,
they like
the Rockets.
Touche.
I mean, because the Rockets were at the best when – my friends are all about, like, I don't know, like 37, 38, 39 or so. And, they all tell me about the Rockets were their favorite team, their favorite team.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because that's right when – I mean, plus, like, that's your first championship. Your first championship as a fan always means – more, and for so many people, it's that one. That's why Sean, if you're listening to the Del Olale show today, you know, it's just he doesn't watch the WNBA anymore because his first championship that he really saw was with the Comets. So Sean is protesting the WNBA the Comets return
to
Houston.
Too.
There's a bunch of stuff going on in college football and college basketball. Kelvin Sampson getting credit for a major coaching change. We'll get into that in some of the latest in the transfer portal and some big-time money being thrown around and Shohei Ohtani. All that's next here on Glanton, Georgia on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Before we go to break, I want to tell you about my friends at OWA Athletics, 767 North Shepherd over in the Heights, OWAathletic.com. They have classes all throughout the week, over 100. They start in the morning. They start and they take a break during the day while most of you are at work, unless you are Twitchers, of course, and you don't work. But if you want to go to work, if you want to get a workout in after that, 4:30, they start right back up. So whether you want to do agility classes, weight training, mixed martial arts, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, every kind of weight training class or athletic class you want, you can get at OWA Athletic. Check them out, OWAathletic.com, 767 North Shepherd. And when you sign up, tell them Joe George sent you by.
ESPN 97.5. It's
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Will Kunkel of Fox has tweeted this out. Astros, three of the last four starters. Blair Henley, 0.1 innings pitch, 5 earned runs. Spencer Arrighetti, 3 innings pitch, 7 earned runs. Hunter Brown, 0.2 innings pitched, 9 earned runs. So three of the last four starters for the Houston Astros have 4 innings pitched total and have given up 21 earned runs.
There was a time this year where you couldn't blame the starting pitching.
Yeah, now it's kind of collapsed.
So now you just now you can blame the starting pitching. You can blame the bats. Specifically, the bats with runners in scoring position. Alex Bregman popped up this past inning with 2 outs and a couple of runners on. And I am sure that old Jer-Bear Branham, waiting in the wings, veins throbbing as he gets ready, gets prepared to unleash hellfire into your ear holes, calling out Alex, me, Bregman.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Breg me, he'll call him. So, yeah, lots of problems.
Lots and lots of
problems. Lots of problems. I mean, I don't know really what else to say at this point.
There's so many.
They haven't given up any runs since the first inning.
Positive. Is Seth Martinez still on the mound? No, it's Taylor Scott, it looks like.
Taylor Scott time.
Honestly?
Scott's tots.
Forgot he was on the roster.
The bullpen ERA. It's been going down.
Keeps going down. Starters going up. Bullpen going down. Lineup doing a lot of the same. So what are your thoughts on the NIL stuff? We haven't really talked about this before, because there's a story today about how Oregon State's running back, Damian Martinez, he's entering the transfer portal. He was set to make $400,000 this year at Oregon State, which, like, feels like a pretty good start for an Oregon State running
back. I would stay at Oregon State no matter if it's in the middle of nowhere. And by the way, it is. Corvallis is the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. I would imagine, though, if you are getting $400K at Oregon State and you're entering the portal, you have someone telling you that there's more money elsewhere. But this is my one issue with the transfer portal and the NIL. It's because none of it's contractual. Like, you can just be scooped up at any moment. Like, I like the idea of the transfer portal. I like the idea of NIL. I don't like how this happens. How a player has been given a bunch of money to stay at Oregon State and to play there, and then after committing to stay there, is just going to get more money and leave.
Communist Joe again.
Yeah, I know. Communist Joe.
Look, it's America. If someone's willing to pay you for your services, you are allowed to take it.
Yeah.
And you should not feel guilty about it, you know, because at the end of the day, all money in some way, shape, or form is blood money. So I understand where you're frustrated with what the NCAA has brought upon itself, because now you're seeing guys move from one school to the next to the next to the next.
Yeah.
But they brought this on themselves, and it's something that they should have probably brought into the equation a while ago. And, yeah, I know. We used to be a country that was a lot more selfless. I would point to the greatest generation and the amount of people that wanted to fight for our country, to fight tyranny and oppression during World War II, to where we're at now, where the idea of doing something for your country is such a foreign concept. But I think it is something that has slowly trickled down to everybody. We are all, as human beings, a lot more me, and selfish. Mm-hmm. And probably we should be.
Especially Alex Bregman.
Per Jeremy Branham.
And Joel
not
Boyd.
Per you.
No.
Not per me.
I just don't love it. But this is the NCAA's fault. This is right. I don't blame the player. I want to make that clear, too. I have no issue with Damian Martinez going to get his bag. It's the NCAA. Like, they've just lost control. They have no control over their sport.
I wonder how much control they ever had, Joe, though. It does feel now like the conferences are sort of turning their nose up. I would say specifically the SEC, Greg Sankey, who runs that thing, because they're realizing this entity can't really do anything for us.
Yeah. Because the championship's not even the NCAA's anymore. It's the college football championship. It's the only one that is not presented by the NCAA.
Right. It's changed so much over the years, the idea of amateur athletics, where there probably was a moment in time where, yeah, you know, I'm doing this. There's no possibility of me making serious money playing professional sports.
Uh-huh.
So I don't really look at this as a trade as much. But when the sport becomes more and more important in certain schools, you are 100% going to be in the film room more than you're going to be in a classroom.
Yeah.
You can understand why some of these players are like, well, shouldn't we get paid a little bit for this? I don't think every player should be paid equally. I do think you should be paid based off of your skills and based off of your talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's tricky with this. And this is in a way, better than the idea of every single player or every single college athlete getting paid the same amount of money.
Because they shouldn't be.
No, I don't think they should.
It shouldn't even be close.
I think if you are legitimately relevant or talented enough mm-hmm. to draw eyeballs, yeah, you should be worth whatever they end up paying you.
I totally agree.
It's kind of the American dream. Like, we all hate the Rafael Montero contract, but good for Rafael Montero and his agent getting him that money.
Yeah. So, and then you put this on the rundown, which I thought was funny, just like seeing this photo that's going around of where Northwestern's going to play their football games this year.
Have you ever been to Northwestern's campus?
Yeah, I worked for Northwestern for like
2 years.
Oh,
I didn't know that. I knew you're from Chicago.
I was the PA announcer for the volleyball team and the women's lacrosse team.
Oh. Lacrosse team was a dynasty.
They were Chris Chelios played for the Blackhawks. His twin daughters were on the team at the time.
Someone who I went to middle school with, she played for Northwestern women's lacrosse team.
Yeah.
When I was in college at Syracuse.
You won like 5 or 6 straight titles.
Well, yeah. I knew way more about women's lacrosse than I ever thought I would because the radio station I worked at in college, we were the women's lacrosse partner. So
okay.
We would like travel with the teams and stuff. So I always knew about Northwestern. And I went to their field, their practice field once.
That's pretty much where the football team's going to play.
They're going to play their football games on that practice field. I got to say, it's a beautiful view. It is right on the water.
Yes.
These games, though, are going to be crazy. I would bet the over for missed field goals in every single one of these games.
Yes.
It is weird to see a Power 5 team, and Northwestern's barely a Power 5 school because of the academic standard and all
Facts.
That. But it is going to be really interesting to see the smallest stadium, high school-esque possible, that's probably going to have portable metal bleachers in there so that anyone can watch these games.
Yeah, and they're going to have like their big games in another venue, it sounds like.
You would think that they would just move all of these games, because right now it seems like this is a temporary fix. You should be playing all these games at Soldier Field, but the problem is Soldier Field
sucks.
Is terrible, yeah. So you don't want to be playing 2 games a weekend there.
Yeah, you can't. It wouldn't last 4 weeks before it would just be destroyed. It's just a funny photo. Like it literally looks like they might see like 10,000 fans? If they're lucky?
If they're lucky.
If they're lucky?
If.
It might be less than
and
that.
And that's a big if.
And then John Calipari, other news in college sports, he had his introductory press conference with Arkansas, and they asked him about why he chose Arkansas.
Yeah.
And what it was really about. And his answer was just unexpected, I guess, but makes sense. He straight up said that Kelvin Sampson is one of the main reasons why he is the head coach at the University of Arkansas. Hunter Yurachek, who is the athletic director there, used to be the AD at the University of Houston, of course. So Cal called Kelvin Sampson to basically just be like, what is the deal with Hunter? Like, is he good? Is he good enough to win championships? And then Kelvin, like, I guess deep dive went into, like, they wanted the Fertitta Center. They wanted new facilities. And John Calipari's thing was coaches win basketball games, administrations win championships. Never really heard it just be like laid out that way. It is fascinating when you think about it. Like the part of the reason why the Cougs are a championship contender is because of Tillman Fertitta and the Cougars administration because of what they feed. It's also a direct shot at Kentucky of why he left Kentucky to go to Arkansas because he's clearly saying that Yurachek is giving him a better chance to win a championship than Kentucky.
I think Kentucky's got to look at a recent basketball program that lost an iconic coach and learn that Lexington, Kentucky isn't exactly the biggest draw, much like Syracuse, New York. I think in college basketball, it can change really quickly.
Yeah.
And You know, with Calipari going to Arkansas, like I really actually, if I'm an Arkansas fan, I'm ecstatic about this. I think this is actually going to work out there for them. Calipari won at UMass, for God's sake. People forget about that with Marcus Camby because that, I think, Final Four got nullified. But Calipari, at the college basketball level, gets results. Kentucky acting like they are above him because of hundreds of years of history, I don't think is a sure thing. You have to really have the right person. Like Jim Harbaugh with Michigan. Michigan probably feels the same way about themselves. We're a prestige program. You were kind of an afterthought until Jim Harbaugh got there. Right, exactly.
Like, at what point you got Rich Rod instead of him taking the Alabama job, I think it was, back in the day. Like yeah, I would expect, the more I've thought about this, Cal's going to have more success at Arkansas than Kentucky will have. I think they're going to fall apart.
I agree. Like I think that Kentucky will probably fire the next guy. And the guy after that maybe has success. But Calipari did a hell of a job there. And sometimes fan bases get ridiculous expectations for their programs.
Yeah.
To what we were talking about earlier with UConn winning again, all these national titles that they've won, they are flukishly lucky from this perspective. Not to take away from what they've done. But they've every single time they've been to the Final Four, they've won it all.
It's crazy.
Where every single time the Cougs have made it, they've come up short. Mm. And, I mean, historically, you go from the Guy V. Lewis era to right now, there's a lot more history for the Cougars up until, of course, the 21st century where UConn really took off. And, of course, there's a long dry period in between of it. But you get what I'm saying here? Like,
yeah.
It's one of those things where success in the NCAA tournament, it is about as level as it gets. Like Kansas, all-time program. How many championships does Bill Self have? Two?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, it's so damn hard to win, and to win six, seven games to win the actual national title. And people are mad at Coach Calipari because he loses a game
he's like,
in the second or third round, where every single year he's turning it over with guys who are making it into the NBA the next year.
Yeah, it is college athletics, it is the Wild West for a player. Oh, the other thing he said about that Kelvin told him, which I thought was funny.
What's that?
Was that because Cal was like, I can't leave my guys, basically. And then Kelvin Sampson was just like, oh, dude, they can leave. Remember, like, they can all transfer. Like, they can all come play for you at Arkansas.
It's really funny. The argument has been turned on its head, like, where, like, oh, well, these coaches can go wherever they want. Well, now the players can go wherever they want. So the coaches still can't go wherever they want.
Yeah, it's like if Deion Sanders wanted to leave Colorado after a year to go to a bigger job, he could have just taken Shador Sanders with him. Like, it's like the transfer portal does make it so different. Like, well, I had three players I really liked on my team in Kentucky that are not going to the NBA. Y'all are all coming to Arkansas. Like, it's just a totally different world. It might be an interesting environment to go there. I'm curious to go to an Arkansas game.
Arkansas fans are underrated as far as dedication, loyalty, and, let's be honest, craziness goes.
As a small city, I like Little Rock. I've been there twice.
Never been.
It's like the drive from Chicago when I moved down. It's like a 16-hour drive, so we would do, like, 10 hours to Little Rock, and then like the final 6.5 to Houston.
There's enough Arkansas fans in this city where if you actually go out and about, you're gonna see a couple, not a ton. Game I've always wanted to go to, because feels like all the games are always drunk when the teams are good, Texas A&M versus the Razorbacks at Jerry World.
That would be fun. That would be
I legitimately want to see what those, no offense, I think you guys should take this as a badge of honor, what these animals are like, especially juxtapositioned against the very polite yet cultish Texas A&M fan base.
All right, our garbage time, we always do it to end the show. That's next here. We're broadcasting live from East River 9. The Killer Bees will be here until 6. Just a reminder as well, tomorrow we will be live at Jack's Grill. Make sure you check your email if you are part of our bracket contest, because they emailed out to the winners. So if you won a gift card, tomorrow is the day to pick it up. You don't have to pick it up tomorrow, but we will have all of them at Jack's Grill. So we'll broadcast live from there tomorrow. We're at East River 9 until 6 o'clock today. It is Glant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
First, though, let me tell you about my friends at Pendleton Whiskey. Guys, this stuff is fantastic. It is first cut with Mount Hood Glacier water, made with the finest northern grains, and on top of that, What you get with Pendleton whiskey, barrel-aged in American oak. This stuff is fantastic. I tell it to you all the time what I do. If I'm looking for a little whiskey, I put one of those big old rocks in a glass, two fingers worth of that goodness. It's smooth. It's refreshing. It's not too sweet. It blends well with a lot of different drinks if you're looking to make some sort of whiskey-based cocktail. I personally like to mix Pendleton with a little iced coffee, but maybe you want to make a Bloody Mary out of it. Yeah, a Rodeo Mary. You can make all sorts of interesting drinks with Pendleton whiskey. Pendleton whiskey is fantastic stuff. So give it a try. You can find it, one, at Drizzly. Order it. Have it delivered to you right to your door. Or you can find it at your local liquor store. It's Pendleton whiskey. It's true Western tradition.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
Hey, you know what? It's not over till it's over.
That's
Astros
true.
Now down 9-2.
Runners on.
First and third. Jose Altuve up.
Jordan Alvarez on deck.
Can they cut the lead in half by the end of the sixth inning? We'll find out.
They will cut the lead in half by the end of the sixth inning, Joe.
And when it doesn't happen, that's Paul Gallant's fault.
I believe that Altuve is the answer. I believe love will find a way.
Well, he walked. So.
See, bases loaded for Alvarez. Jordan Alvarez.
Can Alvarez make it a three-run game?
I would intentionally walk Jordan here. Much like the Astros, Joe Espada should have intentionally walked Salvador Perez to open up the 10th inning of, excuse me, to on the bottom half of the 10th inning for Tuesday night's game.
What a day it's been. We've had all the OJ stuff. The Ohtani news just keeps coming out. Like, they're just dropping, like, these little nuggets from the courtroom where there's text messages where he basically goes, yeah. LOL, I did steal from
they're
him.
They're trying to distract from my birthday. This is a national holiday.
Yeah.
The greatest sports radio host.
Yeah.
From noon to three with all of his hair.
Yeah.
In sports radio history.
I mean, who are the options? It's like you and Ross. Like, we're like, you have more put-together hair.
Yeah, Ross has more hair. Landry has all his hair. Figgy has all his hair.
Yeah, but they're not noon to three, so that's why.
That's true. The 3 o'clock window.
They're not part of that window.
Matt Thomas, bald AF.
It reminds
sucks
me of...
Sucks to suck at, Matt,
what,
MT.
Dude, what was that thing you put out on Twitter, like, at the end of last year? At the Houston Sports Awards.
Oh, yeah. People were congratulating me. I said, I won the award for solo radio host from 10 to noon with the most ADD. And people were like, congratulations.
That was one of those days where it's like, I forget how stupid Twitter is.
Well, the thing is, Joe, like, this is a... When you're hot, you know, when you're a solid...
There's another run.
Well, that was a smart move. They should have walked Jordan. When you're a solid, you know, 6.5, as the Twitch regularly calls me. You know, when you're living this lifestyle, some people, they don't look at what you write on your Instagram caption, you know? Much like those Instagram models out there who are wearing floss and are writing something deep in their captions for every post that they have.
Uh-huh.
You know, people aren't looking at my caption because they don't, they think about me as meat.
They just see your face.
They just see a hot piece of ass.
Yeah.
It's a problem in life. I'm not kidding. This is why all these guys keep sliding in my DMs. You laugh. It actually happens.
No, I laugh because you publicly say it instead of just pretending like it never happened. All right.
Well, I think I've been boldening more people to do it.
I think you are, too. All right. It's time for garbage. It's time for garbage.
It is flattering.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is
just a reminder, if you want to flatter Paul Gallant, slide into his DMs at Gallant Says on Twitter.
Listen, I'll enjoy the flattering, but if you're in the stall next to me and you tap on the floor a couple times, I'm not answering the call. Hey, did you see this? The negative backlash to the popcorn collectible for Dune 2, Joe George?
No.
So, basically, movie theaters across the United States of America put this contraption on top of the popcorn that you can buy for like $20 that's supposed to look like the Dune snakes or whatever the hell they're called
yeah.
in Dune. And people have found it sexual, and all of a sudden the people who put these collectors together are very upset, saying that we would have never created it knowing it would be mocked.
Huh. That's lame, first of all.
Have you seen
it? I don't have it yet. So, Dune 2 popcorn?
Let's just say it looks like it would be a very toothy squeeze, if you will.
Oh, those things are weird. Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Another story, and this just bothers me. On my birthday, no less, did you see what they're doing to White Linen Night in the Heights, George? White Linen Night in the Heights, one of my favorite days in Houston. Now you got to pay.
One of my best moments on the radio.
What happened?
I told everyone I'm not white. I meant
you
to say I don't.
Everyone, you're
I
not
meant to
white?
Say I don't like. I don't wear white clothes. But I just told Jeremy and Joel, I said I'm not a white guy. But what I really meant was I don't like to wear white guy. But yeah.
You're not white. I don't see color.
Yeah.
I would have believed you if you said that because, again, I don't see color. That's why my analysis of O.J. Simpson today has been the most objective. His first name is Orenthal. It's got to be a white guy.
True.
Right?
Runs at Clarence from 8 Mile.
I'm reading some Clarence in that movie... It's a Wonderful Life, white guy.
Yeah.
Also dead, angel, like O.J. Oh, wait, just kidding. He's not an angel.
Yeah,
he's dead.
He's in the bottom one.
Well, if you believe in that, he is dead and gone forever.
So what's happening with White Linen Night?
White Linen Night, they're going to be charging $10. You got to get a $10 ticket to access the party on 19th Street that takes place between Yale and Ashland.
Okay.
Previously, admission had been free. Thanks, Biden. It's his fault.
Thanks, Kyle Tucker, for doing nothing.
So the Astros only get...
Hey, only down six.
Six more to go.
Six more to go.
Hey, I imagine that the runners in scoring position numbers, 2-for-13 last night,
mm-hmm.
with 10 left on base, there's no way the Astros have already gone north of that, no?
No.
I mean, there's absolutely no way, and I'm going to filibuster. We got to figure this out. We got to know if they have actually outdone themselves today. We're just putting things at a tee for Jer, Bear, and Joel. They have left 9 on base, and they are 2-for-9 with runners in scoring position.
I mean, that means they can be better than yesterday.
Alex Bregman 0-for-2.
Hey.
We're just setting the killer bees up. 0-for-2, Kyle Tucker.
Great.
But you did get a walk by Yordan Alvarez with runners in scoring position. That is not a hit.
That's true. That doesn't help
not
you.
Not a hit. Doesn't help you out.
All right. That does it for us today. We'll be live tomorrow at Jack's Grill. The Killer Bees will be there tomorrow with us. And they'll also be here at East River 9 until 6 o'clock. So we will talk to you tomorrow. Paul, happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
And audience, goodbye.
Peace.
ESPN 97.5.